Welcome back to the Rob O'Donnell Show on WILK News Radio, 103.1 FM, 910, 980 AM, or anywhere on that Odyssey app. It is 409, 97 degrees here on this Tuesday, June 24th, 2025. We're chugging along for the week here. It is only Tuesday, but we will get through it. But like every Tuesday, we bring in our friend Tommy Marquez. He's a Navy veteran. He was a senior staffer in Congress for many years, and now he helps us navigate that system for the benefits and information that our veterans should know and have earned. Tommy, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Rob. I'm trying to keep up with everything. I'm as busy as that Lackawanna County meeting that you guys are going to have here. That docket is full. Boy, I'll tell you what, you got veterans benefits on the docket, a $500,000 loan. Some serious times out there in Lackawanna County.
Yeah, yep, there's a lot happening here. So what's happening in the world today? I saw we have a new new Navy Judge Advocate General. There was some general appointments made by the administration today.
Yeah, I'm excited about this because it's not your typical career path for a staff judge advocate. For those people who don't know, the JAG officer, the head JAG officer for the Navy, is in charge of both the Navy and Marine Corps and all of their enforcement of the UCMJ, everything from punishing military members for misconduct to contracts within the military.
It's basically the attorney general for the Navy.
Yes, yeah, that's a great explanation of it. And normally these individuals aren't academy grads. They're usually ROTC officers, meaning they went to a university. Then they go to law school, they get their law license, and then they get hired into the military. That is a typical route that JAG officers have. Very few go to an academy or go to a military school and then, you know, go in into the military and become JAGs in the military. Well, this gentleman, Major General Bly, this is really interesting. He's from Athens, Pennsylvania, so he's a Pennsylvania native there. Went to Indiana University and was a graduate in 1997 of Georgia Law School. But what I like about him, he went to the platoon leader's course as a Marine. He served in the 2nd Assault Amphibian Battalion as a Marine Corps officer. Later on, he went to the Navy Justice School when he was a major and became a civil law officer. So he has time in the Marine Corps as an active duty officer, as an infantry officer, which I think is paramount and a great sign potentially for things to come, because far too often you have individuals who are judging the split-second hair reactions of our military service members and making a judgment on them when they've never actually been in that environment. Just looking at his uniform, I see that he has a combat action ribbon. He has other deployments on the Tarawa with a MU. He was at Marine Corps Air Station New River, North Carolina, where he was part of the director of the Joint Law Center there. So a lot of legal experience and a lot of experience as a Marine Corps officer. I don't think people understand and can even fathom that in the military, you could have people who represent you who know very little about the military. And they know even less about what it's like to be in a combat situation. So the fact that this individual is going to have some of that is a good sign, in my opinion. I think that President Trump probably got a lot of counsel from our friend, Attorney Tim Pallitzer, who is also a Navy judge advocate now. And I think it's a good step because you're seeing the total shift in the culture of the military, just like you are in the VA. And, Rob, that culture is paying off, this shift. I talked to you last month, I believe it was, Rob, about the Army meeting its recruiting goals 4 months early. Well, I'm a Navy guy, and sure enough, the Navy is always a little bit behind on the Army. they went ahead and they met the recruiting goal 3 months early. So I think the culture change that you're seeing within the military, we're not going after people for tattoos of the flag, of crosses. We're trying to recruit people who want to be in the military. We're removing commercials where, like, hey, join us if you want to be inclusive, and DEI matters to us. People want a meritocracy who are joining the military. That's typically the person's MO who wants to be in the military, and restoring that is going a long way at bringing back our force. And I think you saw also, Rob, this action against Iran, this was a really big achievement because the military, let's just be honest, Rob, it's taken a hit the last couple of years. I mean, what do you think? Do you think the military is kind of, you know, during the Biden years after the fall of Afghanistan, I'm sure you had lots of callers. I remember listening to some who were pretty upset, and they thought that the military wasn't any longer what it once was because we abandoned our post there. I'm sure you got a lot of that. And I think doing this action and the way it was done successfully, no injuries, no casualties, and beyond that, the ability to have secrecy. I mean, we had WikiLeaks. We've had all these things come out lately, SignalGate, all this, and this kind of shows that our military is starting to get back to the focus of doing the task at hand, which is imposing our will throughout the world and being able to reach out and touch a foreign country like we did, and no harm comes to them, and total secrecy in the darkness of the night, I think is paramount for our recruiting, along with having good judge advocate JAG officers who are going to be able to look at the spirit of the law, not the letter of the law, and judge people by a standard that's reasonable when it comes to combat. I think those are all things that are leading to these recruiting numbers going up in the Navy, going up in the Army. And I think it's paramount that we have that right now. We need it now more than ever.
Yeah, and just to put it in layman's terms so a lot of listeners can understand how it works normally for a military lawyer, for a JAG officer, especially moving up the chain of command. Usually they're in OCS or ROTC or something like that. And if they get accepted to law school and they're a member in the military will pay for their law school in exchange for them being a lawyer in the military once they graduate, just like being a doctor or anything else. You know, there's those contracts out there. So you have someone who's basically judging these cases or defending these cases or prosecuting these cases that has only been a lawyer. Now, they wear a uniform. They do the basics that military members do, but they work in an air-conditioned office, usually in D.C. or Coronado or some base like that, or Norfolk, but they've never been deployed anywhere. They've never seen much of anything. They may have done a stint on a carrier as the JAG officer on a strike group or something like that. But other than that, you know, they're really just basically being a lawyer on the ship and have office hours on the ship, not like everyone else who's actually doing combat roles. You know, they're dealing with the everyday, you know, disciplinary actions through the different commanders and such on those ships. But they've only been a lawyer. So, like you said, to have this person with his combat experience on the ground coming up as an infantry officer through the ranks and now being in charge of everything is just outstanding.
Yeah, I think it's a good move in the right direction. And I've known military JAG officers who were in 20 years and they only went to the Pentagon for about 15 years and they had one or two other commands posts. So, just think about this, people. If you're a pilot, and you're going to be judged like Sully. Everybody remembers the story of Sully in New York when he landed the plane. When he was judged about keeping his license as a pilot, the entire panel was made up of other pilots, all former pilots, right? If you're a lawyer, when the standard is passing the bar or a review on your character, your morality and everything as an attorney, the bar is done by other attorneys. When you're a doctor, you get your license and everything's done through other doctors. Can you imagine in the military, the one thing that we have split-second reaction time on is being in the military, in a combat zone, and reacting. And you're judged by somebody who has no combat experience, no knowledge of the system, who's never been up all night, or never had all of his buddies just blown up 2-3 days straight in a row due to IEDs, and is not in that war zone, never even been there. That makes zero sense. Doctors don't do that. Pilots don't do that. Attorneys themselves don't do that. But yet, that's the standard that we have for our military who are in these unbelievable, tough predicaments. And I think this is a step in the right direction. Just having somebody who's been in those arenas, I think, makes a world of difference.
No doubt. No doubt indeed. Now, I did see, I'm looking for it, if I could find it here. I did get a notification from the Department of Veterans Affairs that they have pushed through over 2 million cases of backlogs on things. Do you have any information on that?
Yeah, I reported this a while ago on my TikTok page and Instagram and Facebook, where the Navy's backlog, excuse me, the VA's backlog has just been getting just completely decimated. What they've done is they prioritize cases that are extremely long, that they've had a long wait. And they've been going through them. They're using all sorts of new methods and technologies already, is my understanding, to get through the backlog. Now, I've heard a bunch of lies on social media, Rob, from people saying, oh, they're just disproving everyone's case. And I had somebody who said just yesterday on my TikTok page, said, well, they're disproving all the cases. I know that in Oceanside, that the VA there has disproved of every case in the last month. And I explained there is actually no VA regional office who handles claims in the city of Oceanside, California. That's completely untrue. There's all sorts of misinformation going out there. I think what people don't understand, a lot of the backlog is cases that have already been disproved. They were not approved. And a lot of those cases, they need to get new evidence. And when they provide that evidence, the problem is it's a 6 to 8 year wait for it to get, you know, reviewed. So imagine if you go to your car repair shop, and the first time you go around, they're like, hey, it's misfiring. And they send you home, and it's still misfiring. And you come back, and they say, hey, listen, it's still misfiring. You need to fix it. And they go, okay, but now you're going to go all the way in the back of the line, and it's going to be 3 or 4 more days before you're seen. No, they would work on your car first because you already had been seen. So what they've done at the VA is they looked at those cases and they're saying, hey, if you provided the evidence, we're going to look at it right now. And so they're going with the oldest claims first, and they're just having a lot of information now that they're able to look at because the evidence is there, and they're being able to approve these cases. I have not seen the percentage, but I've actually already reached out to the VA to ask, what is the percentage of the backlog that is being approved?
I have it right in front of me, Tommy. Yeah, the VA sent out a press release today, and VA processes more than 2 million disability claims in record time. This was sent today at 9:30 a.m. The U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs announced today that it processed more than 2 million disability benefit claims for veterans in fiscal year 2025, faster than ever before. The VA achieved this milestone more than a month faster than an all-time record reached in fiscal year 2024. At this pace, VA will surpass the previous record number of completed disability claims by more than 14% this year. VA has already awarded more than $120 billion in compensation and pension benefits for veterans and survivors in fiscal year 2025.
See, culture matters, Rob. That's what people don't understand. The culture at the VA has just been toxic for, quite frankly, several presidencies. It has just been really, really toxic. And what we see now is a change in the belief system of like, hey, we need just a lot of people here. No, you don't actually need a lot of people. What you need is people who want to be there, who want to do the work, and make the VA about the veterans that are coming to them, not the people who work in the buildings. When you go to Walmart, they don't build Walmart. They don't put supplies out, and they don't carry stock for stuff that the employees want. They don't take breaks in the middle of the day because the employees want breaks. They make it so it's there for the customer. And the problem with the VA is they have never, ever, until now, taken the mentality that the veteran that comes to them is a customer, and that there's that they have this belief that there's no competition for us, so therefore we can be crummy. Well, we got to get out of that mindset, and it looks like we are, and I'm proud of the numbers that they're getting done and over there at the VA, and I'm proud of what Secretary Collins is doing. You don't need all these people. You're going to get way better productivity with people who are volunteering versus people who are there because they're prisoners. That's just the reality. Attitude matters, culture matters, and we're seeing that at the VA and the DOD.
You know, I just sent you that release, so you have it now. And what I got out of that
$120
billion given to our veterans in fiscal year 2025 against all the rhetoric that they were just going to cut veterans' benefits. But it doesn't look like with $100 billion going out so far. Tommy, I'm running behind, so I'm going to have to leave it there. I appreciate you, my friend.
Thanks, Rob. Thank you.
Take care.